Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next couple of hours, we're going to be talking about cars, and you're welcome to join us. It's this simple. Just give us a call at 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. This is how it's worked for 20 years, is the first segment, or the first segment and a half, is usually slow, but everybody calls in the last 40 minutes. So don't be one of those that calls in the last 40. If you have a car question, or maybe last night at the dinner table, your husband and you were arguing about something, or your wife and you was arguing about something, and I can bring a little clarity to the argument and certainly fall on one side or the other, just depending on the amount of money that you're willing to spend. 602-508-0960. If you're into the social media stuff, Facebook, Instagram, we have Salem Boys Auto and Salem Performance. We've got lots of pictures there. And it's pictures of parts that we took off that were broken, not working, and the new part, side by side. So if you have an old motor mount that's broken in your right hand or on the workbench to your right, and on the left is a brand new one, you can clearly see what a broken motor mount looks like. You can look and see what a leaking heater core looks like. You can see lots of parts, but what we do at the shop is the technicians are responsible for, they've got the old part off, but before they put the new part on, they just set them side by side. We have a company camera, take a picture of it, and then my daughter, Andy, ultimately writes the story behind it. So if you want to see car stuff, we're not here to sell you. We're not here to do anything other than help educate you. And we've created this interesting website or this account in Facebook and Instagram where we talk about cars. It's not about us. It's about you and your car problems. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. This portion of On the Hood is brought to you by Blackwell Automotive. He's up at 40th and Greenway, north of Greenway on the west side of the road. He's been around a very long time, for at least 20 or 25 years. Tom works on all kinds of cars. He likes to work on hot rods, but he understands that there's more to it than just the hot rod, because that can dominate your time. So in order to have a balance between customers and their needs and then hot rods that may or may not be in your shop for the next 6 months, it's a matter of back and forth. But Tom's a good guy. He knows right from wrong. He has a good staff. And he's a good fabricator. So not too long ago, there was a guy with some running board brackets that weren't available, and Tom was able to manufacture one for him. And it actually performed a whole lot better than the one that came with the running boards. But he's a pretty good guy. Tom Blackwell, 40th Street and Greenway, just north of that. I had an email call this week. And the gentleman had a problem with his tire pressure monitoring system, and they call that TPMS. And he said intermittently it would come on. Then he had a problem where he had only hot air coming out of the vents, and he had a light on his climate controls blinking. And I think he said it was the air conditioning light. Then he had a seat belt that was stuck. And what he wanted was somebody who already knew how to fix the TPMS and how to fix the blinking light and the warm air. And my answer to him was, what you're wanting to do is shortcut the diagnostic process, and you're not likely to find any of us old guys that are going to raise our hands and be able to tell you just by your description. And he used a really important word. It was called intermittent. So intermittently, the TPMS light would come on in the dash. And by the way, it's yellow, which means caution. It doesn't mean stop. Doesn't mean call a tow truck. Yellow means caution. Red means stop right now. So he has an intermittent TPMS problem. He has this intermittent climate control problem. And according to him, he's tried to fix the retractor, and it's not working. The retractor is the thing that allows you to pull out your seatbelt and plug it in. And then when you unplug it, it rolls it back in. So it's kind of like the fishing reel of your seatbelt system. Some of those have explosive devices in them. And what we do is when you have a collision, the airbag module, or the black box, you can call it whatever you want, sees the accident, and it will explode this small charge in your retractor, which will take your seatbelt and suck you into the seat. So this happens in one-tenth of a blink of an eye. And so you're going to sit there, and no matter what happens to that car, you're going to be in the seat. So you're not going to come out of the seatbelt, and this explosion happens within, I don't know, a second after the accident happens, and usually the accidents are certainly longer than a second. So the idea is there's lots going on here, and he wanted just somebody that was seasoned enough that already knew how to fix all three of his problems, and I told him that's not going to be possible. He talked about going to an electrical-only shop. Folks, there's been lots of electrical-only shops that have come and gone in the Phoenix area. Every aspect of your car is 90% electrical. Everything goes through some kind of circuit, and we're using electronics to do just about everything in your car. But there's not, I'm not, and I don't know anybody that is capable of telling you what's the matter with your TPMS, tire pressure monitoring system, why the light comes on and why your air conditioning light's blinking and all you're getting is warm air. We fixed those before, but they might be four or five different reasons we fixed those. On your tire pressure monitoring system, more than likely there's going to be a tire that's low. It's saying that the right front is low, but really it's the right rear. And that's because the last persons that rotated the tires didn't tell the computer that the red tire went to the right rear and the blue tire went to the right front. So it still thinks that that tire is the right front when it's really the right rear. So we have to, when we rotate your tires, we have to kind of tell the computer where everything's at again. So we can just pretend red, white, blue, and black. And so you have four sensors, and for the sake of argument, then we have to tell the computer where they're all at. Most of the time when you have a TPMS light come on, you should check all your tires, all of them. And you should make sure that the inflation is close to what the door sticker says. So if the door sticker says 32 pounds of pressure, you should have pretty close to 32 pounds of pressure. You can go a little higher than that, but you shouldn't go lower than that. So somebody's going to have to figure out, how come? Maybe I have a bad sensor in one of the tires. So you take the tire off, you take the tire off the wheel, you look at it, more than likely the sensor's bad, broken, filled with water, whatever. So you put a new one on, and then you check and see. You say to the car, can you see that? And the car says, yes. You say, fine, we're done. It's likewise, there's television advertisements out there that talk about taking it into your auto parts store, and we have the tools necessary to tell you what it is, or what, and I think they use the word might be. It's important to know that they're interested in selling parts. So no matter what the code is, they're going to sell you that part. If it's a mass airflow and sensor code, they're going to sell it to you. If it's a coolant temp sensor, they're going to sell it to you. The idea behind that is that's not the way car repair works. Most of the time, the code just tells you that your problem is in Ohio, and you have to find the city and the street and the house number. In addition to that, the auto parts stores are not capable of running an intake vacuum test, fuel pressure test, looking at tailpipe emissions, looking at O2 sensor settings, look at a fuel trim. They can't do any of that. And that's all part of the process of diagnosing your car. So, for instance, an O2 sensor talks in a language of 1 to 5 volts. Okay, so the computer only understands numbers, and every single number from every single sensor is 1 through 5, with 1 being low and 5 being high. So the O2 sensor is screaming 1, and the computer says, well, I'd really rather see you bouncing around about 3, 2.5, 3, 3.5, 3, 2.5. I'd rather see you bouncing around in there, but you're just stuck at 1. So they're going to sell you an O2 sensor. But in reality, you have a huge vacuum leak underneath the hood. You have an F-150, and the PCV valve line has collapsed, and you got this big tear in the line, and it's sucking air. And the O2 sensor is reporting exactly what it's seeing. The O2 sensor is seeing a lean condition. It sees a lot more air than it sees fuel. So the O2 sensor raises its hand and says, hey, Mark, I've got a problem. I'm going to turn on the light, and you need to find it. So then we go in, and it says O2 sensor lean. Okay, I can figure that out. So first thing I do is artificially inseminate the motor with fuel. And if I see the O2 sensor go from 1 to 5, it's still alive. I just tested the parameters of that sensor. So I know it only goes from 1 to 5. So 1 is a whole bunch of air, and 5 is a whole bunch of fuel. And the only two things coming out of the tailpipe is air and fuel anyway. So that's how it works. They're not going to be able to tell you, and they're going to say that based on our studies, you need an O2 sensor. The problem is their studies are flawed because they sold 100 O2 sensors this week, and only two of them came back. So they assume the rest of them were successes, and that's a faulty assumption. I'll tell you from personal experience that when we have an O2 sensor or an oxygen sensor code, that's what an O2 sensor is, only about 20% of the time is the oxygen sensor defective. Almost all the time, 80% of the time, there's something upstream that's making that oxygen sensor mad. So if the fuel pressure regulator is leaking fuel, then the oxygen sensor is going to go 5555 all day long. From morning till night, from the time you start it up till the time you park it. And you can replace that oxygen sensor until we're all dead, and you're not going to fix the fuel pressure regulator that's leaking raw fuel into the fuel system, into the vacuum system or the intake system. There are those kinds of issues when it comes to diagnosing, but spending your time calling shops and saying, what do you think my car is doing when the AC light's flashing and all I get is warm air? The answer you're going to get is, and it's an intermittent problem. The answer is going to be what I told this gentleman. You can wait till it gets worse and easier to find. You can have somebody go in there and start replacing parts on educated guesses. That's going to be a little expensive. Or you can wait till it fails completely, which will make it really easy to find. So keep in mind that the light is yellow. That doesn't mean stop. That means just caution. So that's how it is. 602-508-0960 if you'd like to join, or if you have a question, or if you have an argument between you and your brother, you and your mother, you and your father, then you can give us a call and we'll do the best we can to settle it. 602-508-0960. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday from 10 to 12, we're here talking about cars, your trucks, your boats, stuff like that. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. We have two callers on the line, and we're going to take Kevin first. Kevin, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. My name's Kevin. I spoke with you last Saturday. I have a 2008 Dodge Ram that was having AC problems.
Yeah.
And I tried what you suggested, and so I am using regenerated air or whatever,
uh-huh,
as opposed to outside air. And it seems like if I'm over 1,500 RPMs, the AC works fine. But if I'm idling or under 1,500, it just blows warm. I thought you had mentioned to maybe try and put another can of Freon in. I just wanted to make sure if it happens to be Freon now and I try and add a can, can that really damage the compressor?
Yeah, because the Freon circles goes in the circle of the compressor, and we turn it to a vapor, and then it goes to a liquid. We turn it to a vapor, and then it goes to a liquid. Well, we can't run liquid refrigerant through the compressor because it's going to try to compress that air, that you know, it's not liquid at that point, it's a gas, and we can't compress gas. If what you're saying is right, I think you're right. I think either you're too full or you're too empty. But whatever you do, if you decide to throw a can of Freon in there, a 10-ounce can of Freon in there, make sure it doesn't have any stop leak in it, because here's the bad news. You come into my shop, and you don't tell us it has stop leak in it, which we would just refuse to service your car. We can't possibly introduce that into our machines that cost $4,000 or $5,000. Not too long ago, a guy brought his car in, and they aspirated this stop leak into this machine for $4,000. Well, then they turned around and said to the guy, your car damaged my equipment. So ultimately, the insurance company of the driver of the car settled and paid the shop for the machine because, in fact, his vehicle had damaged. It would be no different than driving your truck into one of our bay doors. It would be your responsibility. So,
yeah.
Call around and ask somebody if they can suck your Freon off, clean it, and measure it, and then put it back in, and then you pay the difference. Usually, that fee or service, depending on how many ounces of refrigerant you need, is between $95 and $125, and you will get exactly the amount of Freon that needs. Now, the only thing you're missing is, does it make any difference on freeway speeds or sitting still? If you say it doesn't happen in freeway speeds, it seems to be a much better at freeway speeds than it does just sitting still, then that definitely is a Freon issue. So, again, it's twofold. Now, you run a real risk by overfilling it. So
yeah.
I'm going to tell you the real risk is about 25%. 25% of the time you'll cause damage, and 75% of the time you won't. But the difference between 25 and 75 is how much you're putting in it. That's what it is. Anyway, well, listen, thanks for calling back. Those are good symptoms, though. Those are good symptoms. That gives everybody at least a start. Now, the only other thing that can cause that is a bad fan or a bad fan clutch. So if it runs cold at your 60 miles an hour, we don't need the fan at 60. We're pushing air through the grill just fine. So if you say everything's fine at 60 miles an hour, but it warms up when I come to a stop, then I'd be looking at the fan clutch. And most of us gray-haired guys can look at the fan clutch in about 4 minutes and tell you whether it's good or not. So, all righty. Good luck to you, Kevin. Thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Mark. Mark, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yes, hi, Mark.
Hey.
This is more of a, I'm looking for a recommendation, basically. I have a 1990 Ford F-150 with 65,000 miles on it, and the gaskets, the valve cover gaskets are leaking. So I called another mechanic, but he never returned my call. I guess he didn't want the job. But would you know anybody that you would recommend to do something like that, replace the seals?
There's nothing special about what you're talking about. It's kind of like it's just basic for any good technician. I mean, your F-150 on a 1 to 10 scale is a 2 compared to some of these Hondas and Toyotas that they'll pay $800 labor to get to the valve cover. So
wow.
Your valve covers, you know, there's a lot of guys that could do those in their sleep. So here's the problem. You need to have them agree with your diagnosis.
What's the problem?
That's it. They need to agree with your diagnosis. So
you
can go in there and say, replace the valve cover gaskets, and then they do that. And then you come back and say, I still got the same leak. And the shop says, we didn't diagnose the leak. You did. So I would just simply take it in and say to them, take a look at I've got an oil leak. And let's pretend that is it a V8 in your F-150?
Yeah, it's the 5.0.
Okay. So is it on the driver's side, is the leak in the front of the valve cover or behind the valve cover? Same way on the passenger side. Is it in front of it or behind it? Do you know idea where the leak is?
Yeah, I did, because I went down there. I tried to tighten up some of the bolts to see if it was just loose, and they are loose, but it's leaking out of the back rear on both sides.
Okay. And that could be the intake manifold, too. And that could be an oil pressure switch. I don't think your oil pressure switch is back there. GM's have them back there. Yours is probably at the oil filter housing. But you just need them to agree. So what we do is we put dye in it, and it turns the dye is fluorescent orange, fluorescent green. We go drive it around the block 3 times, come back. We get our black light and our funny goggles, and we go in the back, and poof, there we got water running out of or oil running out of both valve covers. But what part of town do you live in?
I live off the. I'm new out here, so I get spun around. But I'm out on off the 101 and Scottsdale Road.
Way north.
Yeah, north.
Okay.
Well, I don't mind driving. Hey, listen, I don't mind.
Well, I'd probably go see Blackwell at 40th and Greenway. And you can
Blackwell?
Call, yeah, Blackwell, 40th and Greenway, and you just say, hey, you know, can you give me an estimate to check out and replace the valve covers on my Ford? And I'd like to bring it to you so that you can verify it, and I'll already have the estimate. And then if, you know, everything's kosher, I'm going to say go ahead.
Sounds great.
Okay, Mark.
Thank you very much, Mark.
You're welcome. There's lots of good shops in town. Let me tell you about Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil's been around since 1968. Phil worked on automatic transmissions when they first hit the market. Phil's been from Fred Flintstone all the way to these brand new electronically controlled transmissions that look at 20 different inputs in order to know when to shift how to shift, and then hold the gear depending on the load of the transmission. So today, it's a lot more different. It's a lot different diagnosing a transmission than it was years ago. Years ago, it was one of five things on a GM or a Ford or a Chrysler transmission. Today, you can take the pan off and it's so full of metal that you know that the entire unit's got to come out and be disassembled and washed before we can even determine what's wrong with it. That's going to be an overhaul anyway. So Phil's been around a long time. If you ever drive up and down Washington there at 40th Street in Washington, his sign's been there for many, many years. He's a good guy. He knows what he's talking about. And as with all transmission shops, if you can make it happen, then insist on somebody taking a ride with you. If you can't make it happen, then at least you can tell them when it normally happens. Cold, hard, hot, fast, slow, heavy throttle, light throttle. It only does it at 60 miles an hour, and it shimmies and stuff like that. That's what's important. So that's Automatic Transmission Exchange at 40th Street in Washington. The phone number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to call us and ask a car question, you can, 602-508-0960. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696. Those of you who are on the Internet, 888-960-9696. Every Saturday, that Mark Salem is here from 10 to 12 answering your car questions.
About that demon, all the mobile.
34 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. Mark Salem here every Saturday from 10 to noon talking about car and car repair questions and problems. Larry Harker's Auto is at 38th and Indian School. Why is that important? Larry, and that's actually Bob, he runs the shop. He's probably one of the best diagnosticians that I've ever met in my life. He is just really good. You can wave that flag or that red cape in front of him, and he'll chase down your problem. Now, it's not going to be cheap, but the guy can do what a lot of other guys can't do. And I would dare say that as far as the diagnostic process, I know very few people that are better than he is, and I don't know that I'm as good as he is. But anyway, 38th Avenue and Indian Schools, Larry Harker's Auto. Bob and Ellen run and operate it. You'll meet Ellen when you go in the front door, and Bob is in the shop. Let's go to the phones real quick, and the first caller is another Mark. Mark, how can I help you?
Well, hi.
Hi.
Hey, yeah, I heard from your call screener, or however you call that guy, that's pretty unusual. It's been like 15 years and you haven't had two marks in a row. So,
well, there's three marks now because there's the first one, the second one, and the third one. Yeah, that's Gil. He's the one that makes this show look like it is. So he takes all my bad words out, and when I miss my break, he covers for me. But he's called the engineer, and he's the one that answers the phones. Mm. So his name's Gil. Anyway, tell me about your problem.
Okay, and everybody on the air, I just listened to that commercial, and it does work. You put that greenergadgets.org in, and sure enough, you can find out where to recycle your electronics.
Yep,
that's pretty cool. So, hey, you were talking about yellow and red, and yellow's caution, so... That just happened in our life, so I thought I'd let you know that check engine light is yellow.
Uh-huh.
And it comes on, and you drive the car a few times, and it goes off. So in something like that, you can ignore it, right?
You can. Well, here's the problem. There is this monitor deep within the bowels of your computer. And the monitor,
yeah.
monitors all the inputs and outputs. It's like... a teacher having an auditorium full of 1,000 kids. So the monitor isn't going to clean that code off the memory until it sees so many days, so many hours, so many stops, so many starts, so many hot starts and cold starts. You'll never make it through emissions. So you'll have to get it fixed by then. But the check engine light, the code would help us, because we would at least know if it's fuel or spark or compression or transmission or cooling system.
So do you guys, you technicians can see the code that's been erased? It's still stored internally?
No, we have fancy monitors that are much more fancier than those little cigarette packs at the auto parts store where the three witches whiskered kids using. No, we have that go in and it's, we say, hey, has the O2 sensor monitor been reset? No, it hasn't. Okay, well then we got to go find out why it hasn't been reset. It's really funny when you drive those cars during this monitor reset, it takes two people. The first one tells the driver what to do. Start the car, drive at 35 miles an hour for 7 minutes, 7 to 10 minutes. Then stop the car, cycle the key on. Now, you have to do this out on the Indian reservation because you can't do it anywhere else. So it literally, it's that kind of a thing. Now, most of the time we tell people, the monitor hasn't reset. It'll reset in 2 weeks. Just keep driving the car. Drive it every day, and it'll reset because you're going to hit all those marks. But in your particular case, I would just have the code. You can go to auto parts store and have them read the code. Just take note of it, and they're going to give you a piece of paper.
It's even easier than that. We have insurance that you drive by the mile, so you have to plug into this same place that you guys plug into, their tracking device. And it tells you when you log into your insurance dashboard, it says, hey, you've got an engine code, and it was like a P014, and it had something to do with the O2 sensor.
Okay.
Coincidental, huh?
Well,
but it just went away over a few driving cycles.
It could have easily been something in the fuel or spark system that was a temporary problem. Or maybe the O2 sensor never warmed up because you went someplace where it's cold. Or it didn't warm up appropriately based on historical stuff. So it's okay to drive it. That's the first question you ask. And second is I'd probably address this at least 30 days before your next emissions test. Okay.
Especially if it happens more than once, that it comes on and disappears,
it's
a recurring issue.
We have a code that's not a hard code. You're talking about a soft code. We can still track those down. We don't need the computer to talk to us. We just go in and look at the O2 sensor and say, what aren't you seeing? We create two huge parameters. We create a lean condition and it better talk lean. We create a rich condition and it better talk rich. All of a sudden, it hits those two parameters. Okay, we'll go look somewhere else. We have to look upstream.
Yeah.
So that's how it works. Anyway, thanks very much, Mark. Thank you very much. Dan, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning. I have an 06 F-150. Luckily, I got the air conditioning compressor replaced before it grenaded inside the system.
Good, good.
He got it sucked down. The guy's really conscientious about making sure he get a good vacuum before he recharges it. Also, he found the fan clutch was bad in it.
Okay.
Well, the thing will freeze you out in town, does a great job. You get on the freeway, and it progressively the flow gets less and less because it's starting to freeze up. I've gone through this for a while. I was wondering, if the fan clutch does not cycle, will that cause the system to freeze up?
No.
In other words, it stays engaged all the time.
No. The fan clutch is supposed to pull air through the AC condenser in the radiator, okay?
Yep.
The fan clutch is normally disengages over 35, 45 miles an hour because you're running through the wind so fast, we don't need the fan to suck.
Yep.
So if it was the other way around where I'm on the freeway and it's blowing ice cold. It blows snow out of the vents, Mark. But around town it gets warm. Fan clutch. Those are classic symptoms of a fan or a fan clutch problem. But I don't agree with the symptoms you spread out that that's going to be a fan clutch problem. Because it's around town, the temperature's closer to 3/4. And when I get on the freeway, it goes down to a half plus. Well, that's classic fan clutch issues. So I'm not quite sure that I agree that what you have is fan clutch. I think it would more likely be a Freon issue or an orifice tube that wasn't the right color or something like that. And now you pull the purple one out, and you better put a purple one back in, but the guy before you pulled a yellow one out, and he didn't have a yellow one, so he put a purple back in, so everybody makes the same stupid mistake as we go down the line. So
that gives me something to deal with going back to him. I appreciate you.
All righty, you betcha. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You got 1 in 5 chance to be there. Forty-four minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name's Mark Salem. The lines are wide open. If you'd like to call us and ask us a car question, we're going to be on the air for another 15 to 18 minutes. So if you, and then we'll be, after that we'll be the next hour from 11 to 12, we're going to be doing the same thing. So if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508, and then of course our radio station is 0960. So give us a call and we'll help you out the best we can. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is one of the best diesel shops in town. Nate and his staff are really, really good with Chevy, Dodges, and Fords. Anytime that you need or you have a problem that nobody else seems to fix or nobody else wants to try and you have a diesel, then Strictly Diesel would be a great place to go. They're on south of I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. They sell parts 24 hours a day on their website, and you can get more information about Strictly Diesel if you go to Mark's Best Car Repair Shops list, click on diesels, and we'll tell you just about everything you need to know. But he does everything, but it's also important that foreign and domestic, and the key word here is light diesel trucks. So he doesn't do the big dogs, he does the light diesel trucks. Years and years ago, 602-508-0960, years and years ago, when I first started on radio, there wasn't a whole lot of car guys in anywhere. I started in 1988, and it was just kind of question and answer. We've kind of fine-tuned it now where we say to the caller, you know, year, make, and model of your vehicle and tell us what the symptoms are. It's not productive time to talk about what the three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store said or what somebody said on the Internet. It's more important just to get a give and take. Here's a good example. I have a vibration in my car, and I say, well, is it speed related? Yes. So it starts at, oh, it starts at 20. Okay. And when does it get the worst? Oh, it's really bad at 70. Okay. Does it shake the steering wheel left or right? No. Does it shake in the seat of your pants? Yes. The problem's in the back of the car. It could be a tire that's become, the treads become separated so that the tire is no longer flat all the way around. It has a big egg on it where we have air in between the different layers of the tire. And what you just described is classic symptoms for a tire separation, but it could also be a tire that's terribly out of balance, or it could be something else. But whatever it is, it's spinning on the back end of the car. Sometimes they'll say it shakes the whole car, and that could very well be a back problem, a back end vibration, if it shakes the whole car. Usually on the front of the car, it just shakes the steering wheel. But those are the kinds of things, and it, you save yourself a lot of diagnostic money if you can answer those questions. But if you walk in and say, on Tuesday my air conditioning doesn't work, thank you very much, Mrs. Jones, let me have your key, okay, we'll call you. That's really not the kind of conversation you want to have. So it's more, the shop should ask you more about it, the shop should investigate it while you're there, the shop should say, can you show me? It's Tuesday, or why don't you bring it back on Tuesday and let me see what's going on. So those are the kinds of things that your shop should be doing. And I would say 75% of the shops out there already do it because we understand the importance of two-way communication. There was this lady that came in for a gas leak. She had a gas smell. And we looked at that car three or four times. We couldn't find anything at all. And she said it was really bad when she gets up in the morning. We had it overnight. We could smell the gas leak, but it went away quickly. And we could never find it. We pressurized the cooling system and stuff. So about the third time she brought the car in, we said, can you know, we don't have a key to the trunk. Can we check the trunk? And she says, no, there's nothing in there. So we finally identified that it was coming from the trunk position. So we took the back seat out of it. With a long screwdriver, we opened up the latch and popped the trunk. She had a styrofoam cooler in there and a gallon of gas that had spilled that had been left in the styrofoam cooler. So obviously the back trunk area had gas. There wasn't much gas, but it was a significant smell. And we also found some old clothes that we're pretty sure she was going to take to Goodwill or something like that. And in those old clothes was some underwear. So I think she was just embarrassed about, you know, us getting into the trunk. So what we did is there are lots of women in my organization. My wife works there, my daughter works there, and we've had female service riders before. The women were looking at us thinking, what are these guys going to do? Well, it was a dilemma. I mean, what the heck do you do? And so what we decided to do, based on the input from the ladies, is just say, clean up the trunk. We can't put anything back there. We have to throw everything away, but she'll probably not know. We'll clean up the trunk, and we'll tell her that we found a loose clamp back by the gas tank. So that's what we did. We just told her. And she came back and, you know, had service year after year after year. But that's what we told her. And that was the path of least resistance, trust me, because there was none of us that wanted to talk to her about a can of gas in a styrofoam cooler and all of her clothes stinking like gasoline. We weren't going to go there. But those are the kinds of things. We also have all kinds of things. We had a lady the other day that pulled into the shop, and she said, my car is meowing. So we put it up on the lift, and we could hear the meows, and we dropped the transmission cover, the shroud and the skid plate, so to speak, underneath the transmission, and then there's three little baby cats there. So we took them out. We found a cardboard box. We gave them some old rags we had that were clean, put the kittens in there, handed them back to her because we're not going to adopt the three kids at the shop, the three kittens at the shop. And the question there she had to deal with is she worked across the street at, I think it's called Allied Signal, or it used to be called Allied Signal, Honeywell. It's Honeywell now. But she lived in East Mesa. So the question is did those baby cats come from work or home? And I think she was going to try to do her best to see if she could find the mother. But those are the kinds of stuff we've had. We've had all kinds of other stuff. I'll tell a story about myself. We had a heck of a snowstorm up here in Payson. And the wind was blowing from all kinds of different directions. And at our place, the snow was between 2 and 3 feet deep. So when I got in my truck and I knew that the 260 had been plowed and I had already plowed my driveway out to the street, I was going to head south and go to Phoenix. But once I got past the casino and I'm heading south, the truck's vibrating, and the faster I go, the worse it is. So I really don't have a clue as to what's going on with my truck. So I get down to Rye and I pull off, and I'm looking for a tread separation on my tires. I'm looking at all kinds of stuff, and I don't understand. I checked the tires to see if any one of them was flat, and the four dualies in the back didn't. So I drove it a little bit more, but the vibration was substantial. It just shook the whole truck. So I pulled off to the side of the road, and I walked around, and my dual wheels, the outer wheels, had been packed with snow. And I thought, I'll bet that's it. So I didn't have anything to dig it out, so I kind of walked around the side of the road, and I found some sticks, and I just started digging out the ice and the snow, because the entire dual wheel was covered in snow. Once I did that, the vibration went from 100 to 4. And so at that point, I'm thinking to myself, I need to melt the rest of the ice, so I start dragging my brakes. I was thinking that if I get the rear rotors hot enough, then the heat will be generated to the wheel and knock it off. But in reality, by the time I'd driven 20 miles, then the truck was back to normal. We've got a caller, and who might that be?
That would be Lenny.
Glenny?
Lenny.
Lenny. Good morning, Lenny. How are you?
Good morning, Mark. Fine. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
This is a day for stories, and I've got one I'm sure you'd appreciate.
Okay.
I've got a 02 Buick Sabre, and I have a vanity license plate, a personalized license plate, okay?
Okay.
And about 3 years ago, I'm going east on Shea Boulevard. Now, Shea Boulevard is a divided six-lane traffic.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So I'm going east, and around almost the third Sixth Street, the light changes, it goes to red, and all the traffic stops. So I'm in the inside lane of a three-lane east. I wait for light change. I look at the guy's plate in front of me, and it's my last name. My last name. Okay?
Okay.
Now, you have to appreciate that. He or I could have been any one of the three lanes in a combination. I just happened to be in back of him.
Yeah.
And light had to go to red, stop the traffic for him, get the chance to see it. Amazing. I'm not done with the story. And about 2 years ago, I'm coming out, and there's a small shopping center. And the stop gets stopped by a red light, and there's a little white car in front of me. I'm waiting for him to clear. And while I'm waiting for him to clear, I look at his license plate, and it's about my first name, Lenny.
Oh, wow. Did you go buy a lottery
ticket?
Isn't that
amazing? No.
You
should
have.
It's amazing. It's incredible. For having a person one time in his lifetime is amazing. But to have a second time in the person's lifetime is amazing. Anyway, I went through ADOT, and I went on the Internet and tried to find out the number of cars could allowable to have a vanity plate. It turns out to be about, in the state, about 1,600,000 people would be eligible for a vanity license plate.
Yeah.
So I picked out my last name and my first name in my lifetime. I think that's an incredible story.
No.
I tell a story to people because I'm looking for somebody who's a mathematics professor to come up with an equation to find out what this truly is as far as the chances. But
that's why you should have bought it. Next time that happens, you need to go get the lottery ticket, because good things happen in threes. So you saw your first name, then you saw your last name, then you saw your first name, and then you go buy a lottery ticket, and then pretty soon Lenny's rolling in the dough. So.
Right, and this at this point in my life, I need it too, because the stock markets have not been good for me, Lenny.
This yes. The last thing you want me to do is give you financial advice. So I'm a car guy, but you know, I leave the financial advice to Paul, who's been around our company for years. And here's what I say to him, Lenny, but don't tell anybody. I say to him, you better invest my money where you invest yours, because I'm going to ask you to see your portfolio and whatever stocks, bonds, annuities you've got yours in, you better have mine in. So far he's been our lead guy in our financial side and handles our 401k as well. And frankly, he's done a good job for Renee and I and the kids. But he tells me every once in a while, when are you going to come check me? And I usually check him once a year. And I said, well, I'm going to do it sooner or later. But anyway, thank you, Lenny. Thank you for that very much. 602-508-0960. We got another call.
Yes, that would be Ron.
Ron, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning. How are you, Mark?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. I'm calling you from my F-150 Ford pickup that I took into the Salem boys, and they did a fantastic job of fixing a very serious electrical problem that I had. And Daniel took great care of me, and I just wanted to call in and tell you how much I appreciated your staff and your facility is absolutely amazingly beautiful and clean, and everybody was so professional, so I really appreciated it and wanted to call in and thank you personally.
Thank you. Now, we need to make sure that everybody knows you're not related to me.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
I've been a longtime listener, and I had never been in because I'd always had newer trucks, and I had I had warranty on my trucks, the dealer. But I sold my company, and I decided to retire, and I thought, oh, well, I'm going to keep this truck. It's been a really nice truck. And suddenly, an electrical problem started. I take the key out of the ignition, and the engine was still running.
Oh, I know that truck.
And then you open the driver's door, and the engine shuts off.
Yep. You had to open the door to get the engine to die.
Yep. Yeah, it was really a weird thing.
Yep.
And when I went to the dealer with it, they fiddled around with it, kept it all day, and never could figure it. They said, we don't know, we don't have a clue what to do. So,
okay, well,
there you go.
Eddie, who just celebrated his 30th year with me, as a matter of fact, I'm going to tell you a real quick story. We had a big party for him the other day, and in front of the entire staff, I gave him a marriage certificate that says Mark Salem is the bride, Eddie Caruso is the husband, and the Reverend Al Sharpton married us, and I handed it to him saying, you and I have been married for 30 years, and I thought my wife was going to kill me. Nevertheless, it was Eddie Caruso. He is a Ford guy, and when we come back on the other side of the hour here, I'll tell you what the fix was and what caused the problem, and to be perfectly honest with you, Eddie's the only one in our shop that could have figured that out. It's not that he's smarter than everybody else, but he's a Ford guy. So he really knows Ford's inside and out. He wouldn't know how to change the oil on an Audi. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. And my name is Mark Salem, and for the next hour, we're going to talk cars. If you'd like to join us, you can, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we've got four lines open. We're going to get to Al in about 30 seconds, but let me tell you about Action Auto Repair at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since the early 80s. He opened up his shop in 1983. He works on BMWs. That's one of the cars he works on a lot, but he also works on Chevy Fords, Toyotas, Hondas, and Chryslers. So if you're up in that area, the North Phoenix, Deer Valley area, you don't already have a shop, may I suggest that you stop by Action, call them and make an appointment, have something simple like a tire rotation or an oil change done, and see how they fit. If you like them, good. And if you don't, then you haven't lost anything other than an oil change. But I'm pretty sure you're going to like them because they do a good job. I know that because I hear from their customers. So that's Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley. Al, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi there. I appreciate your experience and your counsel in these matters.
Thank you.
I have a 13 Tundra that I bought new. Loved the truck real well, except it was a basic model, came with the ugliest wheels that any manufacturer could ever invent. So I want to change them out. So I go to the dealer up here. They have takeoffs, and they're giving me a story that says I have to stay with steel wheels because if I go to the alloys, I have to replace the tire pressure sensors because they're not transferable. Can you kind of enlighten me on that subject?
I've never heard that before, but I've been wrong before. But I don't understand why we just can't transfer the tire pressure monitoring transmitters from one wheel to the other because they both have valve stems.
Well, that would be my impression, but that's not what they were telling me at the dealership.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know the answer to that, but you got a pencil handy?
Sure.
Okay. 480.
Okay.
598.
Okay.
1234.
Okay.
My son lives and dies on the performance side of our business, and he knows tires and wheels better than anybody, including me. So
okay.
Monday through Friday, preferably not Monday morning or Friday afternoons for obvious reasons, but call and ask for Alan.
Okay.
And ask him first,
sure.
There's lots of other wheels that will fit on your Tundra. I mean,
okay.
You don't have to go with, something that they took off that was one step fancier than yours. I mean, you can put anything on there. So he can guide you if you want to look at some of the aftermarket stuff, because I have aftermarket wheels on my Dodge Dually. My wife has it on her Ford Edge. My daughter has it on her Ford Explorer. Everybody in my family has fancy wheels on their cars and trucks. We
okay.
even have fancy wheels on our shuttle bus. So it's yeah, Alan will know the answer. I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, he'll tell you I'm wrong. But
okay.
Yeah, call Alan and talk about two things. Tell me why he said this, and number two, do you have wheels that will match the tires? And that's what you really want is you want to buy the same tires, but you just want to fancy up the wheels.
Right, right, and transfer the sensors.
Right.
And these sensors are something like $70 a piece plus programming.
Okay, ask him about that too. Was first of all, if you bought a set of wheels, we're going to dismount them and mount them and put the tire sensors where they belong, and we're going to reprogram them. There may be a slight charge for that, but I don't know that $70 fairly represents what a tire pressure monitoring system transmitter really is.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure Alan can answer that question, too. I would focus it this way. I'm being told that the sensor itself is like $70 plus programming. Do you find that to be within the realm of,
mm-hmm.
of what you live? And he'll say yes, or he'll say no. We charge our sensors are this much money, and if we're going to take the tire apart or put new tires on it, then we don't charge any labor at all. The programming is pretty easy. You walk around the car, and you pretend that you have four sensors: red, white, blue, and black. We just
okay.
need to tell the computer where they are: left front, right front, left rear, right rear. That's all. We just have to tell the computer where they're at, and they have equipment now that talks wireless to them and all kinds of fancy stuff. So that won't be a hard thing. But Alan can do a better job with your question than I can.
One quick question, though, relative to that. I don't have to take it to the dealer to be programmed. Is that correct?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. You don't even need it. If you had a software update, you wouldn't need to go to them because all of us independent shops have ability to go to the cloud, and we already pay a subscription fee. So we go to the cloud and we hook it to your car, and the cloud goes, oh, this is a Toyota Tundra. Oh, it's a 13 with this, blah, blah, blah. And then it says, what do you want to do? And I say, well, look, is there any ECM or PCM upgrades? Yep, there's an ECM. Okay, well, go ahead and download it. So it costs me $128. So that's the time and the cloud fee. And I plug your car in, and after 2 or 3 hours, it's done. We had a BMW in there the other day that took 14 hours to download the new software, and we have a pretty blazing Wi-Fi in our building, but what is important is we now have this piece of equipment that's hundreds of dollars that we hook to the car so that the battery will have a stable voltage the entire time. Because if I've got a BMW hooked onto it, and somebody inadvertently or accidentally opens and closes the door and the dome light flashes, we have to start all over again. So that's why we tape the door shut. And that's why we put a balloon on the antenna or on the windshield wiper so everybody knows, don't touch this car. It's in the middle of programming. But we do hook up this battery tender to stabilize the voltage. But that's how we do it. All right, well, thank you, Al. I'm sure Alan can take care of you. Who we got next, Gil?
We have Bill.
Bill, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I've got a 2000, excuse my throat, it's a little froggy today. I got a 2017 Nissan Versa.
Okay.
The very first time I changed the brakes, you know.
Okay.
I go to the parts dealer. And the entry level brake pads are $27, and the high end, they call them ceramic brake pads, are $52. So I thought, I got a nice car, I'm going to swing for the 52. Okay.
Okay.
I put them on, and every time I stop, it's been about, I've had these brakes already for 4 months still, but every time I come to a stop, it sounds like when you've gone past your pad and your metal's touching metal, that grinding sound, like you know you're going to need a new rotor.
Yeah.
It sounds like that. And
okay.
I was wondering if you ever heard of the problem, or should I just go with the entry-level pad next time?
Well, without mentioning the name, is this an auto parts store that doesn't actually do auto repair?
Exactly.
Okay. Well, gosh darn it. What I want to say is that idiot doesn't understand, but I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say that young person doesn't understand that the rotors dictate what pads we put on. So if you turn around and take a Mercedes-Benz with soft pads and you put ceramics on that thing, you're going to be in trouble. That customer's going to hate you. So in your particular case, you have to go by what the OEM manufacturer says. Now, when I say OEM, the manufacturer of your Versa says, these are the pads. Well, we can cross that pad number into 10 different brands. Wagner, Raybestos, Occubono, you know, Bendix is another. We can cross that over, but when we look in our particular brake atmosphere or our application, and we have it all on a computer, we just punch in your Versa and it says these are the pads. That's it. So he upgraded
Should I go to another store like that?
You know, no.
Or should I go to the dealer and buy the pads?
No, you can do that. Just get a name brand. And you need to go to the manager and in a nice way say, I'm very unhappy mm-hmm. with these ceramic pads because would you like to take a ride with me and I'll show you. I would very much like to return these pads to you and I'd like to buy the exact pads that the book calls for. So
yeah,
because
I have a lifetime warranty,
I know, but a lifetime warranty is just a joke. Whose lifetime?
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then they're
going to
prorate it. So if you go in and let's say you paid $100, okay? $100 mm-hmm. for the pads. So you go in and the pads are 25% left. Well, then you're only going to get a credit of 25% because you got use of 75% of that pad. So it's a lifetime warranty, but we're going to give you 25 off your next pad. And that way we've hooked you like fishing. I got you. I got my hook in your mouth and you have to come see me every single time.
Okay, this is the trick to it. When he flashed up his screen, I was looking at it sideways, and I go, "Give me them babies, the high end fit." He didn't tell me, you know, which ones I should get. I just pointed and says, "Give me them expensive ones," you know. So this time, when I go in, will his computer have the info to direct me to the right pad?
Well, what you're asking for is Bendix, Raybestos, Wagner, Occubono. You're interested in having a brand name on the box they give you. You want to know what pads do you have that are direct replacements for the ones on my Versa. I don't want to upgrade. I don't want to walk down. I don't want to walk up. What pads is my Versa supposed to have? And I'm impressed that you admitted that you told him, you pointed at it and said, I want those pads, because basically you just wiped out the opportunity for you to blame it on them. But lesson learned.
Yeah.
That's okay. Lesson learned. And I want to commend you for admitting that because, I'm going to tell you something. Your wife knows and so does mine. Sometimes men don't always tell the truth. And
right,
so,
right.
And that's okay.
Can I throw another small question at you?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, the car is going to be 2 years in July, and I travel a lot in Mexico, so, you know, I want to be on the safe side and not have mishaps, okay?
Okay.
Is it all right? What I'm thinking of doing is taking it to Thompson's, getting my radiator fluid flushed, you know, it's 2 years old, and getting my serpentine belt changed, whether it needs it or not.
How many miles are on the car?
I thought about changing. Huh?
How many miles are on the car?
It has 105 because I go to Mexico a lot. Oh. I said 105.
All right. My personal recommendation is 80,000 miles or 8 years, and you're way past that. So I agree that the timing belt, if it's got one, all the V-belts, all the fan belts and stuff, and all the hoses are due. Now, here's the key. First of all, Mexico is going to have all kinds of parts for your car, so I wouldn't worry about it. There's a kid now over there in Rocky Point named Doug Shukers that used to work for me. He's a fine technician. He has his own repair shop, and he tells me all the time, I can get parts for anything. In your particular case, I would just take all the old stuff and put it in the trunk of my car. That way, if you do break down in Mexico, all you need is somebody who knows how to use a wrench, and they can put your old parts back on. But yeah, if you haven't done any fluids, then you're due for hoses, belts, and fluids all the way around. Okay? All righty. Thank you, Bill. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem. And, of course, you know that when I say there's times that men don't tell the truth, I'm talking about myself, too, okay? There are times I've said to my wife, you look fantastic. And that wasn't necessarily the truth. But it's the path of least resistance, and you just know that when you open your mouth and say something stupid that you're going to pay for it for the rest of the month, and as it is today, 7 days, 8 days away, and so I'm not going to pay for it. 602-508-0960. Twenty minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Let me tell you real quick about one of my best shops. Automotive Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted, complete automotive service facility. Family owned and operated since 1982. Chuck Nyday started it. Derek now runs it. And they have really great staff, technicians, and their technicians aren't paid a commission on the parts or the labor. They're salaried or hourly, because that eliminates them selling you stuff you don't need. So if you're looking for a great shop in the Sun City area, I'd like to recommend Automotive Dynamics. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. All right, we're taking ladies first, as we always do. Sandra, you're up first.
Okay, thank you. I have a 2004 Toyota van, and it has less than 100,000 miles on it. And I've been noticing when I'm driving, periodically, it doesn't happen all the time, I'll hear a clicking noise, almost like a turn signal, but the turn signals are off, the flasher is off, I'm holding my keys, and it sounds like it's coming right at the driver's side, like I'm looking down at the steering wheel, and I was just wondering if you think that's anything to worry about, or...
Okay, tell me what it is again. I missed the year.
It's like a clicking noise.
No. The car, tell me what...
It's a 2004 Toyota van.
Okay, a Toyota van.
Right.
Okay, all right. Here's what I want you to do. I want you, you have two extremes in the climate control. You have cold and hot. I want you, if it's really cold, I'm going to ask you to turn on the air conditioning when you may not want to do it right now, and if that's the case, just roll the windows down. But you're going to save yourself some big diagnostic money if you can say to them, when I have it in air conditioning, then there's no noise. If I go to heat, there's noise. And when I go to no climate controls, there's noise. There's a blend door underneath the dashboard that redirects hot air or cold air to the vents. When it starts chattering, it clicks like you say. And if you say to them, on this it doesn't and on this it does, then they'll know it's the blend door. And like I said, you've saved yourself some diagnostic money. So,
yes,
and then another thing, too, is maybe when it happens, you could pull off to the side of the road or into a shopping mall. And if it's still happening, then just get out and stand there and put your hand underneath the dashboard as far as you can from the center towards the driver's door. Just touch things. And if you say, ooh, I touch right here and the click is right here, you just knocked the ball out of the park. So you've told them where it's at, and you told them how to make it happen, and that should be an easy repair. Now, I'm just guessing the blend door is it. It could be a lot of other things, but we'll figure it out soon enough. But if you can change it, that's what I'm asking you to do. If you say, if I do this, it happens, and if I do this, it doesn't, that's really important to us.
Okay, fantastic. All right. Very good. Okay, I live near Tatum and Bell. Where do you have a shop? I don't want to bring it into the Toyota dealer.
Okay, well, Blackwell's at 40th and Greenway.
And, 40th and Greenway.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He knows what he's doing. He's a friend of mine, as all of them are. I have their cell phone numbers, and I know Tom's wife, Polly, and I can always call her anytime I want and tell a lie about Tom's behavior and get him into trouble. So I got that ace.
You sounded nice on the radio.
Listen, I am as ornery as they can get. Sometimes I get into trouble, but you know I'm a big boy, son, and I'll just raise my hand and apologize. So,
okay, great. All right. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Roger, you're up next.
Hi, Mark. excuse me. I have a couple of responses and a question.
Okay.
Number one, I want to go back to the gentleman that called on his tire pressure situation.
Yeah.
I have a 2006 Toyota Tundra. The light would come on. I would be at 4 o'clock in the morning going through Phoenix. I'd pull over, pull out my tire pressure gauge. Everything was fine. So what I finally came to realize is, I guess there's a battery in there, or I'm not quite clear of what it is. But my solution was I pulled every one of those sensors off of my wheels, and I carry a tire pressure gauge. And in this day and age, if people have to rely on a light to check their tire pressure, that's an issue. And
okay.
So I'm sorry.
No, I understand what you're saying. I'm going to argue with you, though.
Let me just finish my...
You got three things, so let's go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. So what I did was I took it to a certified Toyota retired mechanic, and he said, hey, we're going to pull the dash out, we're going to cut that light out, and just check your tire pressure every 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay, so what's your point there? Is that what you did? You disabled the system?
I disabled it completely.
Okay, well, I think you took a huge step in the back room. You ruined... there's going to be a problem somewhere down the line if you sell that vehicle. There's going to be a problem somewhere down the line because that was a bad decision. So your certified, boy, you wadded up my underwear now. Your certified Toyota guy just disabled a very important part of your car because you had a problem with its performance. So and you have aftermarket TPSRS because you can't take those sensors out unless you break the tire off the wheel. Did you have the tires broken off the wheel in order to fix or replace your sensors?
Tore them off. I took them out, and I checked my tire pressure every 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fine. I understand that you made that choice. I'm telling everybody else, you are rolling the dice. Those tire pressure monitoring systems have saved more lives than anything other than an airbag. The airbag saves more lives. But I'm not going to tell you that what Roger did is right, is smart, is safe, none of that. That's like disabling your airbag. That's a bad deal. Okay, you had one other point. Go right ahead.
I'm not going to run to Toyota and go check it out for $70, $80, $100 and tell me something that I don't know. I walk around my tires, and I have good tires, so they pick up a lot of them.
Roger, we need to move on.
Let's move on. Let's go to oil changes real quick.
Okay.
You've spoken multiple times about oil changes, synthetic oil, semi-synthetic, and regular.
Yes.
How often do you really believe that synthetic oil should be changed? I mean, bottom line, how often?
Well, let me just explain something to you, Roger. I am an expert with oil.
I understand. Okay. I've been listening to you for 10 years.
All right. So you don't have to worry about what I'm telling you is being the truth. The synthetics will go 10 to 15,000 miles on virtually every car in my fleet of 32 rentals, and all my family has synthetic. And Mark is running his 12 and 13,000 miles. My wife is going the full 15 because she's on the road a lot. So the answer to your question is it's 10 to 12 to 15, and your owner's manual sometimes will dictate 10 or 12 or 15, but I know it'll go. The synthetic oil is a far superior oil. It's like a steel-belted radio compared to a 1932 Ford, a tire off of a 1932 Ford. So there's nothing at all. The conventional oil is what your dad and my dad had. That's 3,000 to 5,000 miles. Semi-synthetic or blend is between 5 and 7, and from 7 north all the way to 15 is synthetic. It's a superior oil. It protects better. It flows better cold. It flows better hot. It has more detergent. Everything about synthetic oil is worth the money. But there's a lot of people that say, I only drive 3,000 miles a year, and I say to them, put conventional oil in it. That way you only have one oil change a year. So you drive 3,000 miles, put the cheapest oil you can find. There's no harm, no foul in that. 602-508-0960. Ted, if you stay there, you're going to be my first caller. But if anybody else wants to join, I got four lines open, 602-508-0960. Folks, it's not in your best interest to disable safety devices. I promise you. I also work in a lot of crashes, and the TPMS, Tire Pressure Monitoring System, saves lives every day that I'm alive. So please don't disable yours. We'll be back in just a minute. About that theme, 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Folks, my emotions get the better part of me. Let me explain real quick. Mr. R called in and said that he had this tire pressure monitoring system problem, and he went to this Toyota certified guy that knows everything there is to know, and I can't tell you how many times I hear that on a weekly basis. Oh, this guy used to work for Mercedes-Benz, and so he's really appropriate for my Toyota. None of that is true. Then he said something about going to the dealer and having them charge me $70. There are 95% of the jobs that the dealer can do and the independent shop can do. What we can't do is handle factory warranty issues. But we can do anything else they can do. Anything else they can do. So that's not the only option. And folks, I do mechanical issues with respect to car crashes. I have one right now where the driver said all of a sudden it swerved left and he crossed the center line and seriously hurt and killed some people. So the idea is that I've been around the block. I've seen all kinds of people die, and if they would have had their seatbelt on, they wouldn't have died. So safety devices in your car, they save lives. And then he calls back and says, if you do the belt, you have to replace all the pulleys. I don't know where he got that. Let me turn the question around. It's, Mark, when you replace the belts on your wife's car, do you replace the pulleys? No. When was the last time you replaced a pulley? Probably once a year. How many cars do you service? 20 a day. So you've only seen one bad pulley? Yeah, I've seen one bad pulley. Sometimes an idler pulley, sometimes, the tensioner pulley, whatever. But the idea is that those kinds of things, it's the right question you ask. It's not the statement you make, it's the question. Mark, do you love your wife? Yes, I do. Mark, what do you do about your wife's car when you change the belts? Do you replace all the pulleys? No. Does your wife travel out of town? Yes. That's how it works. Okay, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa. They're really, really good. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Brian and Thelma are the salt of the earth. When you go and you meet one of the two of them, you'll understand why I suggest you go there. It's the only shop in Mesa that I've been able to find that has the highest level of expertise and customer service. So Thompson's Auto Repair on Main Street, servicing the entire Mesa area on Main Street just east of Stapley. Let's go to Ted. Ted, thanks for holding. How can I help you?
First of all, thanks. I've been a customer off and on over the years, and you've helped me several times.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I have a man issue.
Okay. I'm with you.
I have a 2003 Mazda 6. I had a dead battery.
Okay.
And I tried to push it out of the garage, and I didn't stop in time, and I hit the driver's door.
Okay.
I need it relined, and I live in Chandler. Is there somebody that... I don't care where I have to go in the valley. That doesn't matter.
All right.
I've got plenty of time to do it.
All right. Why don't you want to report this to your insurance company?
My deductible.
Okay. Did it bend the door around to where it's, you know, kind of like looks like a windshield?
No. It raised it enough that it still closes
okay.
with effort, and I bent the top corner window side, you okay. know, on the window some, but it still closes with effort.
Okay. But it's going to leak air and water, you know?
Right.
Okay.
That's why I'm still in the garage.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. I want you to call my daughter, Andy, at the shop.
Okay.
And ask her, because we have a couple of people that we recommend. We're going to try to send you close by. There's a
sure.
young man named Kyle who's provided great service to us and our family, and he works at a body shop. I just can't remember where.
All right.
And I'm going to send you to somebody that we use ourselves. So,
thank you.
And my wife wrecks cars like once a week, so I'm there a lot. Thank you. Ted, don't repeat that, okay? All righty. Thank you. Bobby, you're up next. Bobby, how can I help you?
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I've got a strange one for you. I've been listening to you forever and stuff. Who knows it could be you. I've got a 2012 Nissan Frontier, all right, 4x4, V6, 4.0. And it's got 142,000 miles on it, all right? And last weekend, I went up to Flagstaff, all right?
Okay.
And I drove up. Everything was fine. I parked it Friday night, and it got pretty cold over the weekend, you know? And I didn't get back in it till Sunday morning, all right?
Okay.
But sat over those 2 days, whatever. And then I go and never had a problem. I turn it on, and it just starts running really rough, and the check engine light started flashing at me.
Okay.
All right? And then, so I said, well, let me get out and try to drive it, you know? So I got and drove down the road a little bit, and it was like shifting really. It was like holding it, staying in the lower gears and not wanting to upshift,
okay.
you know? And so I pulled it back, and I said, well, I'm going to park it and let it run. Maybe it's the cold weather or something, all right?
Okay.
And so I parked it and let it idle, and then and as I'm loading up to go home, the check engine light went off, and it smoothed out, and then I drove. It still shifted funny, but then it kind of cleared up by the time I got to Camp Verde or something.
Okay, okay.
So, and I should tell you one other thing that I learned from your show last
okay.
week. I'm one of those people that shoves the gas all the way in there, you know,
you
overfills
mean,
it.
Yeah.
You know? I've learned from you now. I won't do that anymore, okay? And I did that 2 miles down the road before I parked it that night, okay?
Okay.
I filled it, overfilled it, you know? So I just want to throw that in there, too. And then I don't know if cold weather could, like, thicken up the transmission. Forgive my ignorance.
No, no.
Or something.
Well, here's
so,
what happened.
But I just,
this is what happened. The flashing light almost always means an ignition misfire. So we can have an errant spark because of moisture. And of course, colder weather in Flagstaff is going to have a little bit more moisture than, you know, down here in Phoenix. So it could have been something to do with moisture. It could have also been that you stuffed it full of gas and you overflowed mm-hmm. the canister and we're sucking raw fuel out of there. And until we can suck all the raw fuel out of there, then it's not going to run right. The transmission that is of no concern of mine, because the transmission is going to do what the throttle tells it to do. And the throttle knows what your right foot's doing. So forget the transmission aspect of it. That's
okay.
going to be related
okay.
to you going deeper into the throttle to gain speed
right,
that
yep.
you otherwise
that
wouldn't
makes sense.
Have done it. So I just
okay.
keep driving it. You know, if you keep
okay.
driving it and everything's okay, then if you want to test my hypothesis, then stuff the
yeah.
tank again and see what happens.
I do that all the time. I've never had an issue until I was just listening to your show last week. I said, oh, man, I did that right before I parked it. I probably let him know that, too, you know.
You know,
and so maybe just first time. And then the cold weather is the only two things that I've done different, you know.
Well,
so.
in the cold weather, sometimes the car is going to, you know, a car develops a habit just like a horse does
yeah.
and everything else. So
yeah.
so the car's never – when was the last time the car saw 8 degrees above zero or 22 degrees? Or
yeah, that's true. I'm down yeah. here all the time.
Yeah, yeah. So if it cleared up and it doesn't happen in the next week.
Yeah, it's been fine all week.
Okay,
so,
then I say
– it cleared up on the way home. So.
And there's no check engine light and there's nothing – there's no byproduct
no.
of this. Then tell your wife that Mark said it had to be the moisture in Flagstaff, and
yeah.
and say he raised his right hand and he said he's sure it was the moisture in Flagstaff, and then we don't have to admit that we're wrong.
Can you even pull an engine code 180 miles later?
Yeah, it depends on the year, make, and model, but we do have memory in most of the newer
uh-huh.
cars for the last probably 8 years, and I could be wrong about that. But sometimes
yeah.
when we clear the code, it goes away. But sometimes we have yeah. history in there, so we can go in and look at the history. Now, the history in your particular case with your 12, I think we could pull history out of that, and it'll tell us at least what cylinder the computer saw malfunctioning. Now, you said it's 142,000. Has it had spark plugs in it yet?
Yep, you guys did it at 120,000 just last year.
All right. Well,
and you guys did a great job. And you also did the transmission and everything. I took it to you and just had them go through everything.
All right, why don't you do this? It doesn't apply to I'm just going to talk to you. You're my customer, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So just go by there and talk to Annie, my daughter, and say your dad said that you guys have checked for history codes. That's all, just history codes. And that's all.
Okay.
And she'll do that. She's going to verify what your last name is and that you weren't last in 1988. But this is something that a lot of shops do for their existing customers. And so I'm offering you the same thing. Okay?
Okay.
All righty. Thank you very much. I'm running late on a break, but it's my fault and it's not Gil's. So we'll be back in a minute. Forty-six minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here till noon talking about car repair. We start at 10 o'clock. Let me throw something out here. As with every profession, there's going to be disagreements. There's going to be guys that say synthetic oil is any good. There's going to be guys that say use synthetic oil in everything. It's backwards compatible. Otherwise, this new synthetic will go back to the first car of 25, 35, whatever. It's no different than doctors. It's absolutely no different than dentists and doctors and everybody else. Everybody is allowed to manage the parameters in their trade, in their skill. And it's no different with car repair. You have to know, if you don't know already, that I'm a tyrant. And I know right from wrong, and I don't want my employees to get me in trouble. And so we have clear and concise things. And we always default to the customer side. So, and there's shops out there that are like me, and I copied them. So it's not a situation where you have to go to the dealer, you have to go to the independent shop, you have to go to a transmission shop, you have to go to a transmission shop that's all of a sudden doing electrical work because he doesn't have enough transmission work, and you don't have to go to a tire shop if your cooling system's overheating, that kind of stuff. It's just a matter of common sense. So when you talk to technicians, there's probably some out there that don't agree with some of the things I say. That's okay. I'm willing to defend my position and listen to somebody else's, but that doesn't mean I'm going to change. But there are times that someone will call me and they'll have a great argument and I've misrepresented something or misinterpreted something, and I don't have any problem with raising my hand and saying I was wrong. I've only done that once in my life, but nevertheless... My wife's going to kill me. She's going to be all over me. Anyway, so that's what it's really all about. Here's what I want to ask. If there's any doctors out there, I want to ask you a question. Not too long ago, one of my family members went to the doctor, and he was in his 60s. And the doctor said to him, you're going to die of cholesterol, diabetes, or blood pressure. That's the odds. Cholesterol, diabetes, or blood pressure. So I'm going to give you a small amount of a pill that helps control blood pressure, diabetes, and the cholesterol. And so we're going to call that a preventative step. We're going to say this gives you a better chance. Now, I'm not real sure that I want to live to the time where somebody's changing my diapers. I'm praying to God, take me sooner than that. But the real question is this a valid thought process? Is this some new technology? Is this something that there's merit? Or is the alternative, is the other end of the spectrum, we've heard about that for years and years and years, and no, I don't believe it, or no, I don't think that that's a valid, or I do that to my own clients, my own patients. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you're in the medical field and you're in that area of doing annual exams and prescribing medicines for all the maladies that we have, I'm interested in what you have to say about that. On one hand, it sounds kind of fun. Not fun, but it sounds kind of right. On the other hand, I don't know if I want to take those medicines if I don't have those maladies. So I don't really know the answer to that, but that's the kind of stuff that happens in our industry all the time. You already know that I tease people about Fords, but the Ford and Chevrolet argument's gone on my whole life. So it's just I have a little bigger voice than the rest of them. I can tease people with Fords, but everybody knows I'm just teasing them. Everybody knows I'm, and I don't even have Chevrolet underwear anymore. I'm driving a Dodge. So, and I told you before, my daughter's driving an Explorer, a Ford Explorer. My wife drives a Ford Edge, and my son drives a Ford truck with a 6.0 liter diesel engine that is one of the biggest piles of crap I've ever seen in my life. But we're so deep into this truck. And it's a company truck. And it's performed admirably over the last 2 or 3 years. But the upfront cost to get this thing on the road was unbelievable. We could have bought a new truck for what we spent on that one. But everybody knows the 6 liter in the Ford is bad. But we also know that General Motors has had terrible failures with air conditioning systems, with suspension, all kinds of stuff. So everybody has their own, you know, good and bad. If you learn anything from the show, I want you to think about this. It's not really in your best interest to go in and say, I want to buy a Nissan or a Toyota. Tell me what you think. Because you may not get the truth. He's trying to guess which one you like. So he or her, is that a... But the better question is tell me what cars your immediate family drives. What cars? Do you guys like those cars and do you buy them because they're dependable? Or do you buy them because you can buy them cheap? Or do you buy them at the auction? Or what? What do you drive, Mark? What shuttle bus do you have? Well, we have a Dodge Grand Caravan. Well, and you drive a Dodge truck. I know, but I got 2 Fords in the family. I got 3 Fords in the family. And my mother-in-law drives a Suburban that has 17 million miles on it. And I'm exaggerating, of course. And she loves it, and she won't trade it in for the new technology Suburbans. But if she did, she'd have a great amount of new information on the dashboard, but she just doesn't want to, and that's okay with me, too. So it's just it's a matter of asking the question, Mark, do you use synthetic in all your cars? Yes, but I got a couple of oil burners and oil leakers that I don't use synthetic in. I use a conventional. It's cheaper. Mark, what kind of tires do you buy? We buy Toyo tires. Why do you buy Toyos? Because we love the tire. It's been very good to us. The company's good to us. It's been a huge success. We used to sell BF Goodrich, not anymore. We used to sell Michelin, but the price point is substantially higher than the Toyotas. When we look at the comparison, when we compare the performance, so otherwise they have, there's a number there that describes the average life of the tire, then there's one for traction and A, B, and C, with A being the best and C being the worst. And then they have tread wear and traction and tread wear. And so those are the kind of things that we look for. But that, I'm not saying everybody else has to follow me. We all buy different brakes. Some of us buy Bendix or Wagner or Rebestos or Akebono, that kind of stuff. And it's really not a matter of what's made in America, what isn't. Because probably 60, from 50 to 75% of all the cars out there have parts from offshore. I was talking to a guy the other day that tracks parts backwards for manufacturers. So the manufacturer may say, hey, this other car guy is buying motor mounts cheaper than I can. Go find out where he's getting his motor mounts from. And in this particular case, he tracked motor mounts, and I don't remember what country he went to, but there was this huge factory owned by this very nice gentleman, and he sells his motor mounts to everybody in the world for $8.50. But once we get him to the United States, then we distribute him throughout what we call the warehouses. Then the warehouses distribute them to the storefronts, and then the storefront distributes them to me, and I then sell them to you. That motor mount's going to be $80. But there's all these people in the middle between the guy who made it and Mark Salem, who installs it. And actually, it's between the guy that made it and the guy that ends up with it. So those are all kinds of things. I heard a statistic the other day from someone I respect that something like 75% of the new Ford trucks are made in offshore. It is true, and the Chevrolets are the same, and the Dodges are the same. They're all the same. They're assembled in the United States, or they're assembled in Mexico, or they're assembled in Canada. The VIN will tell you that. But the fact of the matter is that's just where it's assembled. All the parts come there, and then it's assembled from there. Who we got, Gil?
We have Craig.
Craig, good morning. How can I help you?
Mark. Hey, Mark. Love your program. Use your shop. I have a quick question. I don't have a problem with my car, but it's an Infiniti. It's kind of like a little, you know, little rocket car. And when I start it, it idles high. It's like 1,400 RPM. And I usually wait till it comes down to like 800 or 900. The problem is it's sitting in my garage. My wife can't get in it, so it's really aggravated that I sit there and wait for it to slow down because I don't want to back out, you know, like a rocket ship or have my foot on the brake. I think I'm, like, increasing the life of the car by letting it, you know, slow down. Am I wrong?
She called first, and she's already paid me to say you're wrong. So, here, let me explain. The car warms up slowly when you're just sitting there idling it. When you put a load on the car and you accelerate from a traffic light and then you stop and then you accelerate, that's the fastest and the easiest and the best way to warm up your car. So I'm with her. I want to tell you, I would bet all the money in my wife's purse that you're not going to lose 100 miles of life in your Infiniti if you let it warm up to the count of 10. Long enough to get your seatbelt on, set the radio where you want it, take your phone and set it on the seat, put it in reverse and drive away.
2 minutes.
Two or three stoplights later, you'll be at normal idle. Now, I don't want you to be NASCAR Louie between the time you pull it out of your driveway, but I do think that that's not the best thing for your engine is to just sit there and wait until the temperature goes up. I think that's too long, and I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Okay, let me just clarify. It's not really a temperature thing. It's just about the RPM.
No, excuse me. I'm sorry. I've been kind of sick. I understand. What's happening, though, is as you sit there and the RPM goes down, it's the temperature sender saying, I'm a little warm, I'm a little warmer, and the computer goes, oh, well, if you're this hot, then I should have the idle at 1,200, then 1,100, then 900. So there's a direct relationship between it warming up and how long it hangs the idle. So... And then, if you're in the garage, is the door up when you're in the garage?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Have you been married a long time? Do you love your wife?
1 minute.
Yes and yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I was going to say, let it idle and close the door and run to work. I'm kidding.
Of course.
Thank you very much. That was a fun conversation. Kurt's Automotive is at I-17 in Bell, northeast corner. I've known Kurt and Jeff for a very long time, and there's another kid there that I can't remember his name, wink, wink, but it's a really good shop to go to. Kurt has pulled rabbits out of his hat on behalf of me and a customer that's in his geographical area many, many times. He has ASE-certified technicians. He's at I-17 in Bell, northeast corner, and he's a good guy. My email address is mark, with a K, at marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. If you have a question and you're too shy to be on the radio, then send it to me. Leave a phone number and I'll call you from a blocked line, but I'll call and tell you it's me, and then I'll call back a few minutes later. Gives you a chance to digest the fact that it's me. For obvious reasons, I have a blocked number. Wear your seatbelt. God bless you. See you next week.